So the Apostle Peter stood up on the day of Pentecost and preached to the crowds. 3,000 people became Christians and the church was born. This morning I want to look at three themes associated with this phrase in sort of my allocation for this period, which says that the disciples devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching. 3 points, three E's, which are about to go up on the overhead, please. Eagerness, apprenticeship, and evaluation. Well, nearly three E's. The new Christians devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching. They were eager to learn. The word in the Greek here about eagerness, they devoted themselves, it means to be diligent, to devote themselves, to be earnest. And in fact, that word is used twice. They were kind of eager squared. They were diligent, diligently. They were eagerly eager to find out about what God had to say about this good news, about this gospel. That's why I asked for this passage in Psalm 119 to be read. The psalmist cried out, "Oh, how I love your law. It is sweeter than honey to me." There's a real eagerness to learn there. In our house, it's been GCSE and A-level summer, both together. And anybody with children 2 years apart will know, or will soon discover, that exam summer is a sort of interesting phase in the life of families with that sort of structure. I've been wondering about what's been going on in terms of education and development in our society. And I've wondered whether we've become so focused on the pride of achievement that in fact we've stifled the joy of learning. Have we become so focused on the pride of achievement that we have stifled the joy of learning? My grandfather was born in 1883. That means he was 31 by the time the First World War broke out. And in the early stage of his life, he joined the Workers' Educational Association. And he was learning all his life. Before radio and TV, he had a real delight in natural history and in travel. There were always books around his home. And he had a kind of joie de vivre, a delight in life, a real enjoyment of things. And even into his old age, my mother's got a newspaper cutting of an occasion when, at the age of 75, my grandfather was walking down a canal towpath. And he saw, in fact, a woman had fallen into the canal and was drowning. And this old guy jumped in the canal and rescued the woman. This man, who I only knew as really quite an elderly man, was once, when I was about 7, I think it was, he must have been about 80, he took me a walk around the block where he lived in Leicester. And we stopped from time to time and looked at this and that. And there was this climbing plant growing up the sort of chicken wire fence. And he stopped and we looked at it together. And he showed me the white trumpet-shaped flowers. And as a child of 6 or 7, I learned that this wild flower was called convolvulus. And I could see my grandfather glowing almost with delight in this lovely wild flower. And I've never forgotten the sparkle in his eyes, or for that matter, the name of the plant. You see, Grandpa had no academic qualifications at all, but he loved to learn. And some of us have got certificates of qualification coming out of our ears, but we've lost the joy of learning. Some of us can manipulate theological principles like circus jugglers, but we've lost the joy of discovery. Some of us can quote Bible references or talk about church government all day, but have lost the eagerness of obedience. I think it was John Sung, who was a talented Chinese who went to America to train as a doctor, did very well, and a glittering career beckoned. But then God called him back to China to work as an evangelist. And during the long journey home, I think it was in the 1930s, late 20s, 30s, during the long journey home on the ship, he sensed God calling him to make a real statement of personal sacrifice. And so he rolled up all his certificates of qualification and pushed them out through the porthole. And as they floated away on the sea, so God promised to bring blessing to his life. He lived only 4 short years after that, and some 30,000 people made a commitment to Christ in that time. I'm not telling you this to encourage you to go home and dig out your PhD certificate and your cycling proficiency and your 5-meter swimming badge and put it in the bin. I'm talking about priorities and values here. My point is that a hunger for learning is part of the joy of being alive. And part of the joy of being alive in Jesus Christ is a joy in learning. And the Christians in Jerusalem devoted themselves eagerly to the apostles' teaching. And so my first point is quite simple, really. That if we're called as we believe we are, particularly through that call in January 96, that we as a fellowship here in St. Nicholas are to be a loving community. Perhaps one of the things that binds us together is our joy in learning of what God is saying and what God is doing, our delight in growing in understanding about the purpose of God. The second part that I want to speak about is about the nature of learning. Now, there are many people here who could talk a great deal more eloquently than me about what it is to learn. But I just want to say something about apprenticeship. What does it mean that the Christians devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching? Yes, in Bible times there was an academic community. There were people who listened to lectures and talks and read books. But it seems to me that the dominant approach was more akin to our concept of apprenticeship or sort of national vocational qualifications rather than the sort of academic presentation which perhaps some of us are more familiar with. Certainly some time is spent in the classroom acquiring underpinning knowledge, but most time is spent on the job, tackling real life issues and developing competencies in dealing with them. And you see it where Jesus from time to time took the disciples apart and spoke to them in parables and was establishing in their hearts and their minds some sense of kingdom priorities, of the sort of underpinning values. But then at another time he said, I want you to go out on the kind of missionary journey, take this much money, don't take a wardrobe full of extra clothes. Say this to people. If they don't receive you, say this, do this, take your shoes off, knock the dust off, go on. The method of learning so often was about apprenticeship. And you see it with Elijah and Elisha. You see it with Moses and Joshua. You see it with Jesus and the disciples. You see it with Barnabas and Paul. Over and over again, a relationship of apprenticeship. And the Apostle Paul summed it up, I think, when he writes of the gospel passing through 4 generations of Christians in the second letter of Timothy, chapter 2 and verse 2. He says, the things you have heard me say in the presence of many witnesses, entrust to reliable people, so they will also be qualified to teach others. Now, I don't know how many people you see in that verse. What is this audience? There are 4 generations. You've heard it from Paul to Timothy. Entrust it to reliable witnesses who are able to teach others also. How many people are there? Is it 4? But every time, actually, it's plural. 1 to 2 to 4 to 8. Or maybe 1 to 3 to 9 to 27. It's geometric progression. There's a lot of people involved, but every time the relationship is there. What does it mean for St. Nick's? And I wonder whether sometimes in sharing out the work in St. Nick's, we invite people into a task rather than a relationship. Do we invite people into a task rather than a relationship? You see, it seems to me that what is being taught here so often was that together we do something, together we work on things, and as we work together, so we learn. And I wonder whether sometimes the page of, you know, jobs that need doing, or the stuff which is in the news slip, or the long lists that I guess John has got week after week of there's not enough people to do the overhead projector or run the coffee rater or so on. I wonder whether sometimes we invite people into a task rather than a relationship. And perhaps inviting people into a relationship is more attractive. And that certainly we would get involved in many things if we knew it was to be alongside somebody who could teach us and impart what they learned. Final section is about evaluation. Learning is like a journey with a starting point, some travelling, and a destination. And I think that teaching is most effective when we're clear what it is we want to learn, where we want to get to, and perhaps what some of the stepping stones are in that journey. The early church wanted to learn about Jesus and to spread his message. What do we want to learn as a church? Well, the call is to learn to become more of a loving community. But what does that mean? I could sort of borrow some language from another setting. Can I make a distinction between what I would term values training and skills training? Values training concentrates on our attitudes, our beliefs and our priorities, our personal values. If we concentrate on being a loving community, then values training would encourage us to see Jesus in one another. Values training would encourage us to understand that we're the body of Christ and so we need one another. Values training would encourage us to be encouragers and forgivers of one another. And I think we're very good at this. Lots of teaching in churches is values training. But in contrast, there is skills training, which concentrates on specific things, and perhaps in this sense, specific things we do together, particular action steps that we could take. And perhaps in St. Nick's, we have lots of values training and comparatively little skills training. What's the result of that? Whether I'm right or wrong, just think about the difference between those different sorts of training. If we accept values training, but have very little skills training, what might happen? Well, I think there's two possibilities. One is that we accept the values training and then become complacent. We have the right beliefs, but our lives do not match up. Yes, we believe that we're to be the body of Christ in this place, but we never phone anybody up or never see anybody. And there can be a gap, but we fail to notice because it's not brought home. Alternatively, a lack of skills training could lead us to demoralisation. You see, we've been talking about being more of a loving community for 18 months. Are we doing any better? If we're demoralised, we might say, well, nothing's changed. We're not doing any better than we used to. We'll never achieve the target anyway. It's so far ahead on the horizon that it's unattainable. So it seems to me that we need a balance of values and skills. We need a balance of knowing what's on the horizon, but also being quite precise about where we're trying to get to. I think it was Martin Knapp, a professor at the University of Kent, who suggested that we could describe goals as SMART goals. Many of you will be very familiar with this stuff, but there's a couple of acetates, I think. SMART goals, where in fact we talk about goals being specific, so we know exactly whether we've got there. They're measurable, so we know what it is that we want to achieve, and we can tell whether we've arrived or not. They're attainable, possible goals. Not impossible things that we would never achieve. We're going to increase the income of this church to 1 million. They're realistic. We know that we have the resources. And they're time-bound or time-specific, so that we will get there by December. SMART goals. So if we want to be a loving community, we need values training. We need to know why. We need to understand that if we don't care for one another, we are not demonstrating the gospel of Jesus Christ. But we also need the skills training to understand how to get there. What does it mean? How will we know if we make progress? We need to decide together where we want to go, what we want to achieve. And then we can work at each step and celebrate each little bit of progress. So what sort of things do you think of when you consider St Nick's becoming more of a loving community? Do we share the same dream? I began to wonder what my goals were and how we would know if we'd made progress. And here's one idea which you can bin straight away. It's not important apart from trying to illustrate a possibility. One idea was that we could actually do a survey during the notices in a morning service. Perhaps that slide could go up. We could hand a piece of paper out with a newsletter and get people just to tick boxes during the notices time and give it in. And we could do that in a month's time, and we could do it in 3 months' time and see whether we got on any better. These are the sorts of questions I wondered about. And really, it's things like, did anybody welcome you when you came to church? If we're a loving community, it might be nice if we welcome one another. Did you arrive in time to say hello? Did you start a conversation with anybody before the service? Have you been to any other events in the church? Have you seen anybody who you know from St Nick's outside of a meeting? Have you talked to anybody on the phone this week? Have you actually sat down next to somebody who's not a member of your family? Now, it seems to me that they're very rough things, but maybe they're a start. And if we're going to be a loving community, we'd be sitting next to one another. We'd be talking to one another from time to time. Now, that's a bad list for 3 reasons. One, we need to decide very clearly where we want to go first, and then decide how to measure it. Secondly, it's a bad list because some important things are missing. There's no question there about talking to people after the service. And most important, it's a bad list because I made it up. And actually, we need to decide these things together, because then we've got a sense of ownership. We share it. And we know because we all think we want to be more welcoming, or we want to talk to each other in the week from time to time, then we're beginning to say, yes, we have a sense of commitment to this. And we do it next week or in a month, and then in 3 months' time or 6 months' time, we check out whether we're making progress. And we have a party, because we're doing better than we were. Now, I'm not saying that's the right way forward at all, but I wanted to bring it home a little bit, to say that this goal of learning to be a loving community is something that we can achieve. We can make progress on. Perhaps you can knock those out. Thank you. I heard about a church some years ago that decided that spiritual gifts were important. And so what they did, every sermon, week after week after week after boring week, was on spiritual gifts. Until they asked the house group leaders, and they asked them month after month, are people living spiritual gifts? And eventually, and I think it was more than a year, they got the feedback from the house groups to say that the use of spiritual gifts was a regular part of people's personal lives and a regular part of every meeting that happened in the church. And then they stopped teaching on spiritual gifts. And 5 years later, they'd not taught about spiritual gifts at all, because it was part of the life of the church. They just did it. It was part of their culture. And it seems to me that if God is calling us, as surely he is, to be a loving community, we need to know those stepping stones. And we need to know whether we're getting there or not. And then we can celebrate and feel good about this place. That it's not a community of people that can never achieve, can never get there. Has always got these unattainable, crushing challenges which destroy us over and over and over again. You see, we can actually stand up. We can make progress. We can get there. These things are attainable. I want to finish with a story about a chap called John Grinder. Some of you may have heard about him as a bit of a management guru who invented something called neuro-linguistic programming, but don't worry about that if that troubles you. John was a guy who used to learn to enjoy a new game each year. That's how he described it. Each year, he would find a trainer, ideally somebody in a sort of world-class trainer, and he would join their training session. One year, he wanted to learn to fly aircraft. Another year, he wanted to track wild animals. Another year, it was rock climbing. That year, he joined a small group and spent several weeks learning the technical aspects of climbing. They worked really hard. Eventually, they got to a point where they were getting almost to the end of the training program. And the trainer said, for the first time, that there was an advanced class. And this guy was teaching more of this stuff. And he would decide who was eligible for the advanced class on the basis of a final climb. When the day of the final climb arrived, everybody turned up at the start point, apart from the trainer. Somebody said that he'd been delayed, but they were to start off anyway. So they began the climb, and very soon, taking that particular route up the rock face, they were beginning to use every single skill which they'd learned on the training course in safety, in stretch and climb. After several hours of exhausting climbing, they reached what appeared to be the top of the ascent. And they hauled themselves over onto the very top and discovered that they weren't at the top at all. And there was another whole series of climbs ahead of them. Hidden from them, the instructor was watching their faces as they climbed over that top. And depending on the look in their faces, he selected people for the advanced class. You see, he wanted to climb with people who were eager, who were excited about what was coming up, what was ahead. People who were anticipating higher and higher peaks of growth, of skill, of achievement. Let's pray together.